Hello there, blog tribe. Pete from Do You Even Blog here. It's the show for bloggers and podcasters who want to make money on the internet. Carly Campbell is my guest today from Mommy on Purpose, as well as some other businesses related to blogging and Pinterest. And we are here to chat driving massive Pinterest traffic. Boom. We also talk about monetization for the first half of the episode. I was curious to hear how she is monetized, how she makes money, how she built up this blog over a couple of years to several thousand dollars a month. Curious to ask her story about that. But then we transition into talking about Pinterest. And I got to be honest with you guys. This episode combined with a few weeks back, Kate All's episode on Pinterest have been revelationary. They have revealed things to me. No, I've learned a lot from this chat with Carly and from the Kate All chat a few weeks ago. So much so that I now feel more confident than I ever have before when it comes to driving Pinterest traffic. It's enough to get old Pete here back on the Pinterest bandwagon. I guess I shouldn't call it a bandwagon. That's a little bit unfair. Suffice it to say, I have not focused on Pinterest for over 18 months. And after these two conversations, I am diving back in full time into Pinterest. Not full time. I'm diving back into Pinterest. And I have already in 1 week started seeing results from listening to this chat, re-listening to this chat with Carly and asking her and Kate all these questions. It's been absolutely amazing. So what's that? You say you don't know what board co-occurrence is or session co-occurrence? Well, my friend, we are diving deep into Pinterest traffic today, and I know you're going to love it. So stick around for that. Again, that's like the second half of the episode. Extremely valuable, though. So there you go. At the very end of this tail episode, I will provide one or two short takeaways from my chat with Carly. And I believe that's about it. MommyOfPurpose.com is where you can find her. And bloggingLikeYouMeanIt.com. That's where you can find Carly's stuff. Thank you, Carly, for coming on. And without further ado, bloggers, I present the one, the only, Carly Campbell. Carly, welcome to the show.
Hi, Pete. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you on here. Carly, if you will, tell me about when you told your relatives that you were going to start a blog. I hear there's a story there.
Okay. So I have absolutely no computer experiences whatsoever. Like, I mean, when I say no computer experiences, I didn't even take a computers class in high school and I don't have any education beyond high school. So I said to my husband one day, you know, I think I'm going to start a blog. And he said, oh, that is so sad. And then we discussed how sad bloggers are, and you know, in his opinion. And I said, I bounced back from that. I said to my sister, I think I'm going to start a blog to make money. I explained, this is what I'm going to do to make money. She said, oh, I don't know. I don't know how you will ever make money that way. Like ever. That's, and I said to my dad, I'm going to start a blog. And my dad said, honey, don't quit your day job. It was pretty much too late for that. But I said to my mom, I'm going to start blogging. Moms, you know, moms really believe in their kids. And she said, that is great, sweetie. I believe you can do this blog thing. She said, I believe. And you know what? Not a single person that I ever told that I was going to start a blog, except my mom, because moms believe in their kids. Yep. Not a single person that I told I was going to start a blog thought that there was any point in my doing this. Yeah. Ever. And they have all been pleasantly surprised or shocked.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What was the point where people were like, oh, like I get it. Or like, oh, wow, I had no idea that was possible. Was there like a specific moment that you like told them something and they came around?
Well, the vast majority of people in my personal life still don't know I have a blog, actually. But the people that, I mean, after a while, you just stop sharing with people when they keep telling you like that you're sad and not going anywhere, you stop telling them. But the people that are in my life that do know about my blog and that it's successful, they probably all started coming around. When I made my first 17 cents, my mom was like, that's it. You've got this. But again, she's a mom. So, I think by the time I was making a couple thousand dollars a month, everybody else in my life was like, oh, it's a real job. Real thing.
Oh, Well, kudos to you. I'm glad you could like make that come around for your,
thanks,
your
family. Me too.
So let's just start from the beginning because I'm super curious to hear. Mommy on Purpose is your main blog. What year did you start that?
2016, early 2016.
Early 2016. Okay. Yeah. Walk me through the first like 6 months. You've told your hubby, you told the sister, everybody's kind of like, not sure what Carly's doing right here. What did the first 6 months feel like? Because I'm assuming it wasn't just like a boom, instant grand slam.
The first 6 months felt like trying to learn a foreign language with earplugs in. Like it was so far over my head. I would sit at my computer and I would be like, just do this thing, computer. And I couldn't make it do any of the things I wanted to do. Like, I couldn't make my, I just setting up my website. I couldn't make the oh my goodness, I can't even think of what it's called right now. Like the top bar image thing. I couldn't make it fit into the space. It took me like a week to get that image thing to fit into the space. So it wouldn't be like tiny, 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 or massively blown up. No amount of Googling was helpful at the time.
So, I mean, obviously you've seen quite a bit of success from it now in the past 4 years. When, maybe it was like the first year, second year, when did you finally start to get the hang of like the technical stuff, but then also start building up an audience?
Oh, sorry, like, you did say tell me about the first 6 months, and I only told you about the first like week. But so about 6 months in, I really did get the hang of Pinterest. I figured out Pinterest and I started building an audience using Pinterest. And like, it was not this thing where like I worked for 6 months and then I started getting traffic and then I knew exactly what to do with that traffic and I started engaging all these people. No, it was like, suddenly I had traffic. I had no idea what to do with that traffic and it just ran me over and I made a fraction of the money that I should have been making with that traffic. Mm. And like, to be completely honest, for the year following that initial traction that I gained, I had more traffic, up to 2 times the traffic that I get now at any point in that year. And I still made a fraction of the money that I make now with way less page views, way less audience, way less, because I know how to use my audience. I know how to serve my audience better now. To monetize.
How dare you? How insensitive.
That's a terrible word. I should never have used that word.
No, I get you. And my audience gets you too, by the way. You're in good company here.
I'm glad to hear it.
Well, let's actually just focus in on that because that's interesting to me. I want to ask what you're doing now and then maybe you'll tell me what you're doing then. And I want to hear if you think it was a mistake or just you didn't know what you know now, that sort of thing. But right now, 2020, it's mid-2020, just about. How's the blog making money now with less traffic than you had 3 or 4 years ago?
Well, okay. Well, the blog itself, so if we're just talking about the website as an entity there, I mean, it still makes, if I don't talk about the audience, because a blog and audience are actually separate things. You can take your audience off your blog. You can direct your audience to your email list, to your Facebook page, to your Instagram feed, to your Twitter screen. I don't use Twitter. I don't know what the thing is called there. Feed. Is it a feed? You can send your audience to your podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can take your audience off your blog. I never think of my audience and my blog as the same thing, largely because a lot of the people that I engage in my audience they're not even there to read what I'm writing on my blog, honestly, because my main engaged audience is blogging mom. Or blogging people in general, whereas my blog audience, most of my blog traffic, the vast majority of it is just moms in general. They're not necessarily blogging. So my blog still earns money through ad income and through affiliate sales in post. And I have plans for a mom life-based product. I actually own the URL and I've got it all planned out. There's no time to make it. Yeah, it's going to be, I'm really excited about it. It's going to be based on like organizing your life as a mom, you know, so it's not 7 o'clock and you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't make dinner and now everybody has to eat in the next 5 minutes before bed. So like, we don't want that to happening. It's hard. So that's going to be my mom life product. And then that'll earn with my own products too, but I don't have a mom email list. I actually deleted my mom email list. I'll tell you why. It was because I couldn't write consistent emails or share what I felt was enough value to engage the audience, because when I was, you know, doing that mom life email and I was building that mom life audience, I was still such a new mom myself that I felt like I needed to read the advice, not like I should be giving the advice. And so every time I would sit down to write an email, yes, there was connection. I would get people who would respond to my emails and say, I'm right there with you. I'm so frustrated. I can't get my baby to sleep either. But that's, you can only take that so far. Yes, it's good to have connection, but you do need to be able to offer your audience something of value to monetize them. Hmm. So that was when I started the teaching other people how to get Pinterest traffic. And I started a second. So I have kind of two businesses, mom life and blogging. Because I was like, I know how to get Pinterest traffic. I can teach other people to do that. Because I was getting 500,000 pages a month from Pinterest.
You are currently?
No, now I only get about 100,000 pages a month from Pinterest, but I hardly pin or publish content now. So, and Pinterest requires new content, not just new pins. They want to see new content from you.
Hmm. Okay. I'm going to hold you to it though. Back to my original question. How specifically are you making money? So you have like what you consider like the blog and the audience, which I actually really like, by the way. That was a big fat takeaway.
Okay.
Focus on more. But is this, how are you monetized? Like when you—
How do I monetize? Okay. So I monetized heavily on my blog through ads. I love ad income. I know there's lots of pros and cons to it, but I like ad income. We put a lot of work into our content. I think that it's okay to be reimbursed for people reading that content. I think that it's important to consider the user experience, and I don't use invasive pop-up videos on my ads. So I could monetize further through ads, but I actually, like as a user, I hate the pop-up videos. So I don't have them on my blog. I'm also monetized heavily through affiliates in my blog posts. I spent a lot of time learning to create content that converts. So, I mean, creating the content is one thing. Getting the reader to it is another thing. That initial, like the traffic that I got in the first year, the last half of the first year, they were not clicking on my affiliate links and snapping up my affiliate offers left and right. It took a long time to grow the actual affiliate income that my blog earns to multiple thousands of dollars a month. You know, back then I was lucky.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I just got really excited.
Okay.
Super. Sorry. Go ahead. Okay. Worst podcaster ever. Go ahead.
No, best. I love it.
Oh, so I got super curious. What did you do? So I know very little about optimizing for affiliate stuff myself, quite frankly, other than producing. I was just about to answer my own question. I'll say that in a minute. Let me ask you, Carly. Sorry. I got excited. I just wanted to.
No worries. I'm glad.
Yeah. What did you learn in the couple of years there for optimizing that traffic, using the audience, like we said earlier, to actually get more click-throughs or get more conversions and stuff like that? What did you change? What did you learn in that period?
Well, it's funny. I think one of the things that I did really early on was that I tried to look at what, and this is actually something you should do, but I think I was doing it wrong. I was looking at what else on the internet I believed was making affiliate income. And then I was trying to replicate those things. And when I stopped, but the problem with that was that I didn't have my own personal experiences in the things that I was talking about to convince people to make the purchase. So when I started writing about my own personal experiences, I found that my story sold 100 times better than just trying to regurgitate information.
Right.
Like the people out there reading blogs. So there are multiple kinds of people in the world. There is really like one kind of person that's reading your blog, whatever your blog is about. I'm not really, really sold on the whole, like so specific avatar that you can tell what kind of underwear she's wearing, like kind of thing.
Yeah.
I believe in like writing to a demographic, but it's true that there's like a kind of person that is out there reading your blog. And I realized that the person that's probably reading mom blogs is someone who's looking for personal story information. Because if I'm the kind of person that wants, no, I only want a doctor's opinion, or I only want a psychologist's opinion, I only want a professional opinion, I'm not going to a mom blog for that information. So when I started sharing real, emotional, like personal based stories and weaving into the narrative how these products that I was using helped me in my situation and only true things. So like if it wasn't a product that was actually benefiting me, I didn't talk about it. If this product really benefited me, really gave me a tangible positive change, then I would talk about it on my blog, and those things without fail sold.
That's interesting. Okay. I like that. That pretty much proved the point that I was going to ramble on about, but I decided to like, just let my interviewee, you know, answer it. So good job.
That's good.
That was exactly what was in my head.
We came to the same conclusion probably. That's
good. Yeah. It's even, by the way, I'm going to talk about it anyways. It's even better if you can prove that you've used said product. Maybe this doesn't matter in every niche, but specifically, I like this being able to even like on YouTube example, but you can also put this as images on a blog or, you know, demonstrate in some way. I literally bought this phone. I can review this phone. I've used it. I can show it to you. I can't just like talk about it and regurgitate information. I can show you how it works. I could show you what I like about it. I could show you what I don't like about it. That for me just increases like the honesty, authority, trust factor when Absolutely. It comes to my audience and whether they trust my recommendations or not. You could also publish a negative review every now and then. Not like a negative as in nasty review, but like a truthfully honest, like, I think you should skip this one or whatever. Also builds trust. Little tip.
Definitely. I realized I didn't finish answering your question. Those are the two ways my blog is monetized, but I personally also have other income streams. I also have my own products in the blogging niche, and I have lots of partnerships and affiliates over there as well.
Okay. Yeah, I figured that was the case when you were talking about separating audience and
yeah.
blog traffic or whatnot.
Okay. I don't do any sponsored content really, or not very much, which is unusual for moms in blogging. But
why is that?
Multiple reasons. For the first thing, I'm Canadian. I'm up here in Canada. I'm really far away from you right now, and it's really hard to get Canadian sponsored content with an almost entirely American audience. Like the Americans don't want to sponsor or don't want me to work for them. And the Canadians don't, nobody wants me. And I also don't have huge Instagram or Facebook page following, which is huge. They want to see that public following. Plus I don't like working for other people. And a couple times that I've done sponsored posts and I had to like have it done on the deadline, I was like, ooh.
Yeah. And then you gotta like, not that you can't be honest, but you have to like, make them like look good, and you have to kind of give them what they want. And yeah.
So I don't use sponsor content much.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I'm not a big fan. I did my first like real, like bigger sponsorship a couple of months ago. And I was like, not for me.
No, I hear you.
So walk me through. Let's talk about Pinterest. And I think that might wrap it up for the
talking about Pinterest.
Oh, good. I don't. So this is a good balance here. The only reason I don't is because I'm not very good at it and I haven't spent a lot of time focusing on
it. It's not you. It's your niche.
Well, there's a bunch of rant and ramble here, Carly. No, you're right. You're right. So let's talk about the past 6 months. There have been some changes over the years, group boards, viability. You mentioned fresh content, which by the way, Kate Olive, when she was here a week or two ago, it's pretty much what she was preaching. She's preaching fresh content. Fresh content. What advice would you have for people in their first couple of years? Maybe the first year, maybe the first like 18 months, just getting started. Maybe they're like at 1,000 to 10,000 page views a month, like somewhere in that range. What, if you had to give them a few bullet points of advice, what would you give them in terms of Pinterest?
Okay, well, if you're getting up to 10,000 pages a month from Pinterest, you already have a number of posts doing well, I would think, on the platform. And I would strongly suggest that you lean into what's working for you on the platform. Not all niches and content are created equal on Pinterest.
Okay. What do you mean by what's working well? Like, how can you tell what to lean into? Does that make sense?
Well, like, okay. So, depending on what Google Analytics tells you is bringing in your page views. Okay. So let's not worry about Pinterest analytics too much. They're wrong some of the times anyways. But what Google Analytics tells you is bringing page views to your site from Pinterest. is what people are clicking on from Pinterest to come to your website. So now, without getting too far into the whole Pinterest algorithm, we have to understand that those clicks are coming from somewhere on the Pinterest algorithm, and where they probably originate is our boards that we first pin the pin to. Now, that's not always true. Sometimes somebody else pins our pin and they pin it to a strong board, and then that can help our pin take off. But initially, they still had to find your pin somewhere. And the kind of the most important starting point for your pin is the first board it's pinned to. So I'll use my own account as an example. In my kind of broad topic mom blog, I only write to one demographic really, but it's kind of broad. I've got postpartum and pregnancy and keeping your house clean, and I've got saving money stuff. And you know, that's my blog is kind of broad, and I know that's not necessarily the way that everybody wants to do it. But if I have, say, let's use those. If I have those four boards on Pinterest and I've got a board on cleaning, because we start our boards based on topics, right? So if I've got a board on cleaning and a board on babies and a board on saving money, and I'm really only seeing traffic from one of those subjects, there's a very good chance that if you, now I will say, you can look in your Pinterest analytics for this. If you look in your Pinterest analytics and you see, you know, your top boards by impressions and link clicks, there's a good chance that that board that's got the most clicks is going to be your top board. And pinning to that board is going to bring you more traffic than pinning to your weaker boards. Now, obviously, if some reason you have this one blog post that's on one board that's bringing you a ton of traffic and you don't want to write about that thing anymore, then that would be the wrong move to make.
Right.
But your board strength on Pinterest is really important. So if you can utilize your strongest boards by leaning into the subjects that are already doing well for you, pinning more things to that strong board, you'll be able to get more out there.
Okay. I like that. So first and foremost, analyzing topics, which subjects are performing best, and then leaning into that. Would you do the same thing for like pin design? You've been on Pinterest for like a long time. Do you still do a lot of analysis on image, A/B, split testing, you know, that sort of stuff? Or you kind of got it dialed in by now?
Well, I know what works on Pinterest. Like, I mean, I know what works on Pinterest as far as images. I actually have a pin template subscription that I create pin templates for people to use and send them out, because the Pinterest design is huge on the platform. A lot of people's problem does come down to bad pin design. But I don't think that A/B testing is, especially with the changes we've seen on Pinterest in the past 6 months, I don't think that it is necessarily the best use of our time anymore, because we should just automatically, for success on the platform, be creating multiple images for every blog post and putting out multiple images for every blog post, whether you think of it as A/B testing or not. That's, you know, neither here nor there, because you almost have to do it. So like, I don't have any successful blog posts that only have two images out. And then even if one does really, really well, you're not going to say like, oh, this, you know, B was the winner, I'm going to use B, I'm going to pin out B forever from now on. You're always going to be creating new designs for that post.
Let me ask you this. First of all, I want you to pitch us your template subscription in just a second. That actually sounds really cool.
I appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Oh, please do. But before you do that, I got a question for you. I wish I'd known about this a week ago. Where were you a week ago? I hired somebody to come in and create me some templates.
Okay.
Probably like 5 to 10 on Canva. I'm probably just going to download a PowerPoint if we're just being honest with ourselves. And I was planning on just using those like 5 to 10 templates and changing the background photo, or switching up the colors, or changing the text overlay copy just a little bit, like just tweaking it, small tweaks. If we're all going to be creating like multiple pins, multiple fresh images, like all the dadgum time, how often or how much do you change things? Are these like small tweaks you can get away with just like changing one little period, and then that's a new fresh pin? Or what do you think about that? Does it have to be like a drastic overhaul?
That's a great question. And I'm going to say a potentially controversial. So Tailwind has publicly stated that you can't just make tiny tweaks to an image. It really needs to be a brand new image. Like, they want to see big changes. Now, what we have to remember about Tailwind is that they are a business that has permission to use Pinterest's API. Okay. Pinterest can say to Tailwind, you play ball or you don't play. So, okay, we know Pinterest wants to see new images. And from a user experience point of view, that makes sense. If you own a platform, you don't want to be rolling out this identical, slightly different image to the user, like three of them in a row. That's a bad user experience. Okay. But their algorithm cannot aggregate those. It just cannot aggregate images with slight differences. Now, changing a period, no, that's not good enough. Move your image over 100 pixels, crop it in a little bit, change a couple words. It's a brand new image.
Yeah.
Like whether Pinterest or Tailwind is going to publicly admit it or not.
I like that. I actually thought you were going a different direction with the Tailwind controversial thing, by the way. I thought going to say, by the way, I am not speaking for Carly. This is Pete's opinion and Pete's alone, and Pete can be held responsible. I was going to say that Tailwind is incentivized to do more pins per day to, you know, try and tackle this. Like, you need our platform.
Absolutely. This is Carly's opinion too.
Okay.
But I will also say, Pete, that in the 3 years that I've been teaching Pinterest, I've never encouraged anybody to use Tailwind. It's not necessary. And now, like, the way Pinterest has gone now with this new content, you know, you don't have to pin out your old stuff now. I see even less benefit to having them now. I don't use Tailwind.
Neither.
You don't? Okay, that's interesting.
Okay, so I haven't been on Pinterest in 18 months. But starting last week, after I talked to Kate and after I hired Carrie to make me some templates and some pins, for the past 2 days, literally, I started Pinterest again yesterday. So
good for you.
I'm super curious about this, though. You don't use Tailwind. Tell me about your manual pinning process and more specifically, like, systems. Because right now, like I told you, I started yesterday. I created a to-do list item yesterday around noon. I was like, pin something in 7 hours. Because I was like, I have no system for this. I just out of need went and created like an Airtable base where I could kind of like keep track of like the last day that I pinned a post. I'm kind of all over the place and at a loss here, Carly. So tell me about your like manual pinning process or your systems, how you keep track of stuff. What do you use for that?
That's one of my, okay. So I discuss this a lot with a lot of people because my Pinterest course is actually on manual pinning. It's on pinning without Tailwind, but I don't keep track. And this frustrates people to no end, blows their mind, but I'm not type A. And when I originally wrote my course, when I started pinning 4 years ago, I had this binder that I carried around with me everywhere that I like wrote. I had like board lists and then post lists. And it's like, I would pin a post. I would use different colored pens for different days so that I could see by like looking down the colors, like what day. It was an elaborate system. Yeah. And over time I learned that you do not have to keep track. If you are not pinning the same post and the same pin out day after day after day, it doesn't matter if you pin this post. And especially with the changes that we've seen in the last 6 months. So we have seen big changes across the platform. If you pin out a post today and it does really, really, really well for you and the pin goes great, don't worry about pinning that one again for a week or two. You know, and when your traffic starts to die off from that one, make a new pin and pin it. And now I would have said, you know, a year ago, you really want to have 15 to 20 boards that you can pin your pins to over the course of, you know, 3 months. And you try to get it on, that's where Tailwind would have been really useful. But I don't think we're going to see that anymore. I honestly think that we're going to see accounts doing amazing with 4 or 5 boards. Mm. So this is really going to be even less of a true need for Tailwind if Pinterest is serious about this don't repeat your content over and over and over thing. We'll find out. It's too soon for me to actually say conclusively that Pinterest is right about how that's going to work in the algorithm. Yeah. Are those pins going to collect enough data points to rank? I kind of have my doubts, to be honest. But that's what they're saying. So, Pete, I think that you should be creating 2 new pins today per day if you want low maintenance, creating and pinning out 2 new pins per day if you have a little bit more time to invest. I did 7 new pins yesterday. 5 to 10 new pins a day is not too many. I would like you to make sure that you're pinning them to, I'm sure Kate mentioned this, niche keyworded boards. No matter how broad your subject is, you want to keep your boards keyworded. Something that I have just started looking at in the past 2 to 3 months, without taking too much of your time here to try to explain this, the Pinterest algorithm works on 2 really, really, really important ideas. One is board co-occurrence and the other is session co-occurrence. Board co-occurrence is how many times across the platform 2 partner pins appear on the same board. Session co-occurrence is how many times in a given time period that we don't know what it is specifically, 2 partner pins are pinned together in the same session. So my advice for you, if you're getting pinning, you've created your 2 new pins per day, you're going to pin them to your strongest board as long as they both fit on that board. And if you don't have, say, you know, you don't have a ton of content that you're pinning out on that topic right now, pin a handful of third-party pins that's super related that's already ranking for that keyword, because then you're bringing in that session co-occurrence. You're pinning your pins at the same time as you're pinning those other pins that Pinterest already recognizes as ranking for that keyword. Do that every day at the same time-ish of day when your audience is active on Pinterest.
So many questions here, Carly. How do I know what time my audience is active on Pinterest?
Well, if you obsessively watch your Google Analytics all day, every day, Pete, you would know. You can go in to Google Analytics. I would have to look and walk you through it as I did it. But you can like filter just so you see the next, so you see yesterday or even the week prior, and then you can look at when the spike comes from Pinterest. And most niches will see a slight spike at some point in the day from the platform.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, I love this. So many questions still. Where do I pin manually? Where do I do that? 2 questions that I've gotten here. They're all related. The first one is, wow, okay. So I have multiple images per post. How do I put those on my blog posts? Do I hide them? Do I do some CSS magic to like not display them? Do I use a WordPress plugin to hide 5 of them and show 1 of them or whatever? But so people can still click their like Pinterest icon and like choose which image to pin or yada, yada, yada. There's that question, which I'd love for you to answer. And my personal attachment to that question is, can I just go to Pinterest.com, click the little plus sign up there and do my manual pinning that way? Or should it be from my site?
Okay, so I don't hide images in my blog post and I don't put all my pinned images in my blog post. So when you create your blog post, I also don't sit down and make 10 images for a blog post when I make the post. I only make 1 or 2 images when I start out with the post. I add more over time. So when I make my original image for my pin, when I'm writing my blog post, I put it in my post and I pin it directly from the post. Over time, as I make more images for the post, I will go in and I'll plunk some more into the post. I put them all at the bottom. I leave them all full size. I don't care that at the bottom of the post, there's people are scrolling past 3 images. There's nothing else down there. Doesn't matter. So I do get up to 3 images in my blog posts at the bottom, just hanging out, waiting for people, like you said, to click the button and pin. Over time, as I see which images perform the best on the platform, I will take out the ones that don't perform and I'll make sure the best performing image is in my blog post. The reason being is that she's calm now. Okay. The reason being that the image that performed the best probably performed the best because something about the image resonated with the clicker. So that's the one that you want other people pinning out when other people are going to pin it out. And then, you know, so I mean, you've got one or two or three in your blog post. That's great. And then yes, everything else I just add through the plus sign.
On Pinterest?
Yeah. And then if one of those outperforms what's in the post, I'll swap it out down the road. Mm.
I cannot believe you don't have some sort of like massive tracker to keep track of that.
I'm sorry I disappoint you that way.
No, it's not disappointing. It's more impressive.
Like, okay, good. That's good.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Two more questions. This one is actually backtracking. You mentioned this quite a while back. I'm literally on Pinterest right now. Can you walk me through how to tell the board? You mentioned like board impressions and board clicks. Is that just under the normal analytics?
Yeah. So I'm going to go to my Pinterest too, so that we can be on the same page here. Cause I actually have never had a lot of use for Pinterest analytics prior to this most recent update they've done, because they've been wrong a lot. Google Analytics tells a different story than Pinterest Analytics. So go analytics, okay. Up in the top left corner there, mm-hmm. Click on overview. Mm-hmm. And then what loads here is your Pinterest Analytics account. Scroll down just a little bit there and you'll see top boards. There's a drop down menu right under top boards. It says by impressions, or you can see engagements, close up, link clicks, and saves. Do you see that, Pete?
Yep.
Okay. Wow. So if you see top boards by impressions, now this is really interesting. So my top board here has, you know, 700,000 impressions and 18,000 link clicks. And it's my own personal board. Are you still on group boards on Pinterest?
I still am a part of a lot of them. Okay. I haven't pinned them in years at this point.
Hey, that's okay. That's fine. That this could be. So your top board there, is it a personal board or is it a group board?
It's a personal board.
Okay. Scroll a little ways. How long does it take you if you're scrolling, like there's an arrow button there over on the right?
Oh, yeah.
How long does it take you before you bump into a group board on that list?
I'm not sure. Maybe I think the second page here.
You think the second one could be a group board?
Not the second board, but like the second page. So like the fifth or sixth down. Yep.
Okay. So what is interesting about this, and what I don't want anybody to misunderstand about, change your view to top boards by link clicks.
Okay. I just did.
Okay. Did that make that group board closer to your top or further away?
Closer.
Okay. So what I don't want anybody to misunderstand about this list is that when you're still on group boards, and I'm still on group boards too, Pete, and I still pin to them, because in the past 2 to 3 updates that we've done on Pinterest, I have seen pins that I pinned on group boards 40 weeks to 1 year ago start ranking off those group boards. So it is absolutely impossible for us to say at this point that group boards are dead in the algorithm. Really? They are dead as far as instant reach goes. They are not discounted by the algorithm in any means. But what's important to know when we're looking in this view here of this, you know, top boards. So if you have one pin doing exceptionally well on a group board, that one pin can be responsible for all of your link clicks on that board. And you can make the mistake of thinking, oh, that group board is sending me so much more clicks than my own strong board. So I should pin to that group board instead. But that is not the case. You should be building up the strength of your own board, understanding that what Pinterest is showing you is not true as far as how strong that board is. It's just showing you that that board is sending you a lot of clicks because you have one pin ranking on it.
Does that make sense? Yes. Okay.
Good. Okay. Good. Good. Because that is a scary thing to think that I would ever suggest that people would pin hardcore to those group boards because they show up in those lists.
Yeah. It's funny. So about a year ago, it was actually my first interview with Kate. It was probably 14, 15 months ago. This was right when people were starting to be like, WTF group boards. I thought this was supposed to be like instant domination for all my traffic. I just spent like 3 weeks doing outreach and now I'm on like 175 group boards. What? This isn't working. This is like right when it started to like come apart at the seams, that particular strategy. I went out of rage, by the way. I don't mind saying. I went and I left all those group boards. I'd spent like the first year of Do You Have a Blog, like getting to these things.
Yeah.
And they were terrible, by the way. Like I'm looking at the analytics, the virality rates on Tailwind or whatever. Like these were terrible. It's all digital marketing and like blogging niches. It was hard for me. Anyways, in rage, I left them a year ago. So there you go.
So you left them all, but you're still seeing one of those ones is your second board for clicks?
I didn't leave them all. I left like 95% of them.
Okay. And that's good. I think that that's a good strategy. I'm still on about 20 group boards and I probably regularly pin to 5 to 10 of them.
Okay.
And it will be interesting to see. I mean, I currently have 2 pins ranking, bringing traffic consistently, daily, good traffic on group boards that I pinned to about a year ago now.
Wow. Okay. Oh, so interesting.
It is. I was very interested by it too.
Yeah, we're all over the place here with like Pinterest strategy these days, except for fresh content. I think that's something that everybody can agree on. No one wants spam. Pinterest doesn't want spam. I'm with them. Oh, last question that I really have that I can think of. Other people's content. You mentioned a second ago in the, session concurrence?
Session co-occurrence, yeah.
Co-occurrence. I'm going to write that down so I do not remember. Co-occurrence.
Session co-occurrence.
I'm going to Google what that means later.
No, you will not find anybody else teaching about it on Pinterest except for one old engineering paper printed in, written by Pinterest in early 2017.
Wow. Interested in this. What was the other one, by the way? Board co-occurrence? Board
co-occurrence.
All right. I'm assuming Carly has like a Facebook post somewhere or like a blog post on this as well. Or
no,
is this all,
Carly
this
doesn't have any blog posts on this.
Okay. That's super interesting. Well, I'm not writing one, so somebody get on that. I mean that. Other people's content. That's what you said. Pinning like one of your pins and somebody else's like in the same session right there at the same time. How much do you pin other people's content? Just in general, what do you suggest other people do there?
Well, it really depends on how established your Pinterest account is. So when you're first starting out your Pinterest account or when you're trying to grow your Pinterest account, I think that you really should be putting out quite a lot of third-party content, properly keyworded third-party content, relevant to your boards, third-party content, just to establish yourself, your account and your boards on the platform. Mm-hmm. As time goes on and you become established on the platform, you can pin less and less third-party content. Pinterest certainly does not see you as spammy if you only pin your content. It is not like one of those platforms where you're going to be penalized for only pinning your content. It's just mm-hmm. that those other pins, regardless of, you know, what the algorithm is, an algorithm, and it collects the data from other pins that are on your board to determine what the pins that you're pinning are about.
All right. Well, that's good to hear.
I don't know if I answered your question.
You did. Well, the old days, like 2016-ish, it was like, well, yeah, 70-30 or 71%, 29%. That's the exact ratio that you should do. Your content versus other people. Like, we got into that and it was like 20, 30, 40, 50 pins a day scheduled out. And like, yeah, okay. I like your way of Pinterest a lot better than the 2016 way. Okay.
Thanks. I like my way. I like mine better too. Do you know that when I first wrote my course in early 2017, almost all the best practices, except for not repinning your pins over and over again, were already what I was teaching, because these best practices aren't actually that new on the platform. The algorithm has worked this way for a long time.
It's interesting. Well, you didn't know it, Carly, but that was a perfect segue. Why don't you give us a shout out where we can pay you money, where we can find your own stuff?
I would love to take your money. No, so I have a Pinterest course. I personally think that it is one of the most in-depth Pinterest courses when it comes to what actually works on the platform. I mean, you know, if I may toot my own horn, that is out there for the price. So anybody who will tell you that they have a completely up-to-date Pinterest course, I mean, especially with the changes that we've just seen roll out on Pinterest in the last 6 months, if they haven't actively been pinning out for those 6 months and seeing how to drive that traffic to their own blog using, you know, the new guidelines, they don't know how it's going to work. We have to see how the algorithm performs in the wild before we can guarantee a completely up-to-date course. And Pinterest changes its mind daily. So my course is as up-to-date as it can be. And you can find that at blogginglikeyoumeanit.com. I also have a Pinterest template subscription and Pinterest mastermind, where we discuss all things Pinterest in detail daily. And I give my feedback on pins and Pinterest accounts. It is $15 a month. And for that, you get 10 Canva templates per month. And I currently am attempting to also do 10 bonus PicMonkey templates per month. So currently it's 20 templates per month, plus the mastermind for $15. And it's like that. We're seeing really great results using the templates. I don't personally recommend branding on the platform, except for maybe in the blogging niche, because
good. Check mark.
Yeah, because the audience is so much smaller. You do want to look for those really repeat customers. You're not casting your net as wide.
Yeah,
or repeat readers. But okay. But in general, for most niches, say no to branding, I think, on Pinterest.
Okay.
I don't even put my URL on my pins.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Okay. Yeah, all the pin templates I just had made have Do Even Blog at the bottom of them. So I'm glad you gave me the exception. Okay.
You can leave it on there. I don't. And again, in your niche, I think that might be a really great thing to do. In my niche, I don't think it's a great thing to do.
All right. Where can we find more info about the subscription and mastermind?
Ooh, that's such a great question. It's on Elite Pages. So like...
You can buy it somewhere. I'm
not sure where. You can buy it somewhere. Wow. Okay, you know what? After this, because you've asked this question, I will in fact set up a URL that's easy to get to. It will be mommyonpurpose.com/templates.
Wow, look at you. Okay.
I will get that set up by the end of the day. I'm going to write it down.
Templates. I'm going to be sending you traffic when this goes live, so.
Thanks. I don't follow a lot of the rules very well, like branding and having pages where people can buy your things and that kind of stuff.
I like that. All right. Blogginglikeyoumeanit.com, mommyonpurpose.com/templates. Is what we're going to have available in the very near future. I love it. Well, Carly, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you. Thanks for Bree and Crystal for coming and hanging out, two Online Impact members, snooping in on our podcast. Thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. I love to talk about Pinterest, and I just, there's never enough opportunity. So I really appreciate it.
Alrighty, bloggers. Time for a few of my takeaways from this chat with Carly. Takeaway number one, you don't have to get all fancy on us with your fancy pants, spreadsheets, and trackers, and printing out printables paper to track your Pinterest pins. I'm one of those people, by the way. So if it sounds like I'm mocking you, I'm mocking myself. I need stuff like that, trackers, to keep me from like letting things slip through the crack or whatnot. But I gotta admire what Carly said about nope. That's totally cool. I do not have a tracker. I don't track what I pin and when and all this other stuff. That kind of blew me away, for one thing. And honestly, it's kind of inspiring. It's kind of good to know that making sure you're on top of everything and tracker or tracked McTrackinson over here, it doesn't necessarily equate to more results. That's all. If you're anything like me, you're still going to do the tracker. Sorry, Carly, but I have to, I think. But you know what? At the end of the day, that's okay. It's okay if you don't have the trackers, if you don't have the fancy automations, if you don't have paid tools like Tailwind or any other stuff for that matter, it is still possible to get results. And in fact, this leads me to takeaway number two. The title of takeaway number two is The Way Things Are Headed on Pinterest. And by the way, I'm going to argue Google as well. The way things are headed. What do I mean by that? I feel like Pinterest is making changes to their algorithms, changes to their policies, to, you know, how they drive traffic, how they rank pins, all this other stuff. I feel like they're making changes in the interest of the user. Let me say that again. I feel like Pinterest is making some changes here that favors the user. So, you know, taking away the ability to quickly spam group boards, that's not really what Pinterest meant group boards to be for. That's not how they wanted users to get things. Getting fresh content out there, requiring fresh pins, fresh content all the time. That's good for users. They don't want their platform to be spammed. Same thing with Google. They're trying to get algorithms down that will provide the best results for their users. Period. That's the way we are headed. I find comfort in that. I don't know about you. The reason I find comfort in that is because I don't want to sign up for Tailwind. I'm not going to either. I'm going to try out this whole manual pinning thing. I really like that. I really like what Carly had to say about that stuff. I feel really confident in that. I feel really comfortable in that, that is what Pinterest wants too. And even if they don't run it now, like group boards are still maybe sort of driving clicks every now and then. Or, you know, their algorithms haven't quite caught up to be absolutely perfect. I get that. But that's the way things are heading, I feel like. From Pinterest, from Google, from social media, I would argue, as well. Just, I feel like technology is getting smarter. Companies are getting smarter and trying to hook their users or add value to users, depending on how you want to look at it. And right now, in mid-2020, for Pinterest, I like that. I like the, you know, just 2, 3, 4, 5 pins a day, manually pinning, just, you know, being creative and creating new creative. I said that word a lot, but I mean it. Creating fresh pins as a strategy. I like that. I like that a lot. That leaves more room for people like me and you who aren't doing Pinterest like full time, 40 hours a week. That leaves room for us to thrive and drive traffic to our blogs. I really like that. This is a high and mighty takeaway here on the Do You Have a Blog podcast, but I did feel compelled to share it because I do believe that. This is the way things are heading. I, for one, I feel really good about that for Pinterest right now. You know what? Yeah, that's all the takeaways I got. Thank you for listening, Blog Tribe. Go find more about Carly, mommyallpurpose.com. Blogging Like You Mean It is where you can find her Pinterest courses. Thank you again, Carly, for coming on. I appreciate it. There was good wisdom here for Pinterest traffic. And I think that's all I got. Thank you, dearly Blog Tribe. I really do appreciate you listening. Thank you for continuing to support the podcast and the flourishing YouTube channel. Go look up Do Even Blog on YouTube. Come sub. Come sub, baby. Smash that like button. I love when people say that. Actually, it's kind of annoying. But anyways, thank you for supporting me and thank you for listening. Thank you, Carly, for coming on. And thank you for no particular reason in general, because I felt like saying it. Thanks, guys. See you next time. Adios.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.